here for actually a special episode of We Might Talk Sports. This is the preview for the NBA Finals. We finally have our matchup, the Phoenix Suns against the Milwaukee Bucks. You got half of this right, KJ. You predicted that the Phoenix Suns would be here. The other team you predicted was the Brooklyn Nets. They didn't quite make it. How do you feel about the matchup?
I am excited about the matchup. You know, I'm not a real big fan of Milwaukee and how they play and just how inconsistent they are. But I feel like from a physical standpoint, they're going to create some interesting challenges for Phoenix. And look, I'm a basketball fan, so ultimately I am going to watch it. But I'm not let down that Phoenix is in because they're a legitimately good team. They play well. They play smart basketball, kind of a throwback to, I wouldn't say necessarily like pure 90s ball, but at least late 90s, early 2000s ball where there's defined roles. I would have preferred to have seen Atlanta here than Milwaukee.
Is that because you picked Atlanta to win the series?
I mean, selfishly, of course, that has something to do with it. But I just feel like from that standpoint, even with Atlanta being as wild and as inconsistent as they are, there's a certain fearlessness in them that they would be just a little bit too young and dumb and naive to realize that they were, you know, on the brink of making history for that city and that franchise. And when I say dumb, I don't mean that in like a mean way. I mean, like, you know, sometimes when teams feel like they're playing with house money, they can just let it go. And that's how I feel Atlanta would approach this. Milwaukee plays with a tight butthole, man. And that gets to be tough to watch sometimes. And I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum for, you know, since we've restarted the show, but even on the other iteration of the show, just how tight they are. Just, and it's hard to watch sometimes when you just look at the fact that you feel like you're watching something self-destruct in live time. And then the next game, they'll do enough to get by and win. But there's never anything that gives you the sense that, oh, yeah, this is the true juggernaut, that they have a future as far as being a multiple time NBA champion or at least a perennial contender.
Well, let me ask you about that. Are you impressed that they won game 5 and game 6 without Giannis?
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm definitely impressed with that because for as much as we have criticized Giannis for how inconsistent he's been throughout the postseason and for his shooting, he still has a real big impact on that team. He draws double teams, especially when he's in the post. He's an excellent defensive player, so he's able to set the tone there, and he's versatile. So if you have a guy like that who, you know, even if he's not hitting from the outside, he can go get a bucket whenever he needs to. And now all of a sudden your offense becomes more reliant on Drew Holiday, who is an okay player offensively, but really more so he's a facilitator and he's an elite defender. But offensively, he's just going to facilitate. And Chris Middleton, who's not, you know, a consistent lead guy on offense, and you can still beat a young, hungry team because even with Trae Young not being healthy, Atlanta has more depth as far as scoring is concerned than Milwaukee. And Milwaukee was able to shut all of that down and still power through without Giannis and get to this point. So much respect to them for that.
Phoenix is rolling right now and they have the momentum. As you said, they're calling out sets. Chris Paul, who, and a lot of people forget this, Chris Paul was injured in the first round against the Lakers. He actually hurt the first game of the series and played through that. He was in COVID protocol, so for him to get to his first NBA Finals, and really this is Phoenix's first NBA Finals since 1993. And if you look at where the Suns were just 10 years ago to right now, and this was the last team anybody would have predicted to go to the NBA Finals. So I think this has been an amazing year for Phoenix. Milwaukee, a lot of people predicted them last year actually to be a team that could possibly get to the finals, and I know last year was weird with the bubble, but I'm actually happy for the Bucks because it just seems like the next progression, a lot has been made of the Eric Bledsoe trade, win or lose. Milwaukee has won because they got to the NBA Finals with Holiday. PJ Tucker has been a great signing. Bobby Portis has had the best year of his career. Thankfully, he hasn't punched out anybody on the team. And you just look at this Milwaukee team, they look like a good team, but they don't look like a team that should have gotten to the NBA Finals. So I give them a lot of credit for winning Game 5 and Game 6 against Atlanta without their star player. Let's focus on the coaching. You have Monty Williams, you have Budenholzer. How do you feel about the coaching matchup? I think I already know where you're going with this.
Budenholzer is a two-time coach of the year, so for as critical as we can be of some of his decisions in the postseason with the rotations and even some of the matchup things that they've done and just some of the the strange reasoning for why they've done what they've done defensively, like not having Giannis guarding Kevin Durant and certain, like all those different things that we can bring up about Budenholzer. We know that he can't coach. But I'll say this about Monty Williams is that you've seen clear development and guys get better in Phoenix over the 2 years that he's been there. Like this is a different Devin Booker. You know, we know he could always score, but this is a more well-rounded Devin Booker. This is a different DeAndre Ayton. Jay Crowder, I know, you know, people say that he's been solid for a while, but Jay Crowder, this is a bounce back year for him, you know, so he's looked really comfortable in that system. We've seen growth in Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson. So I feel like just from that standpoint, it seems as if Monty has a better hold of the talent that he has on his roster and the best way to utilize them. Now, as far as in-game adjustments, I've seen Monty Williams make some in-game adjustments, you know, against the Clippers. You know, he was able to switch up who he did his pick and rolls with once Chris Paul was out. And I think that, you know, and it wasn't just Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. He was doing it with Bridges. You know, he was doing it with Crowder. Against the Lakers, he was able to switch up his defense to where they were actually pressuring the ball and making the Lakers have to make quick passes, knowing that LeBron wasn't at full strength. We've seen him be able to do those things. I haven't seen Budenholzer make as many quicker adjustments. I mean, they did change the way that they guarded Trey in the last series. So I think from that standpoint, I would trust Monty Williams a lot more. But I'm not going to take some of my misgivings with Budenholzer's conservative approach to coaching in the playoffs and just act as if it's a complete wash.
Do you want to hear the advice that Popovich gave Budenholzer?
I already heard it. It was amazing. It was typical Pop.
For those that don't know, Budenholzer was a Spurs assistant under Popovich. And so he asked Popovich about advice for, you know, this is his first NBA Finals. Popovich simply told him, you have to figure it out on your own.
Yeah, what else would you expect Pop to say?
That is on brand, on par with Greg Popovich and all that he does. And also on the flip side, Monty Williams wasn't an assistant coach under Popovich, but he did play under Popovich. So Popovich fingerprints are on this NBA final. So I don't think he wants to lean either way of giving either coach an advantage. But Monty Williams has done a terrific job, as you pointed out, with the Suns, and he has gotten really a lot out of a lot of guys, and they're playing fantastic basketball. This isn't just winning on a couple lucky shots or a couple lucky plays. They are playing good basketball. Guys are stepping up. Role players are playing above themselves. Cameron Payne's never looked this good in his life. As you said, with Jay Crowder's playing his role. You're getting stuff out of Bridges. You're getting stuff out of Cam Johnson. I mean, the Suns are really, really rolling. And if you look at the Bucks, there have been a lot of questions. I mean, there was pressure on Budenholzer going into this season because a lot of people felt, even during this playoff, that if they had a first-round exit or a second-round exit, that Milwaukee was going to be looking for another coach. So there was pressure on Budenholzer going into this season. And there were times in this playoffs where Milwaukee did not look very good. And Milwaukee looked kind of shaky. So I give Coach Bud a lot of credit. I give him praise for getting the Bucks to the finals. Now, getting to the finals and winning the finals is two different things. Let me ask you about the backcourt matchup. On the Phoenix side, we have Chris Paul and Devin Booker. On the Milwaukee side, we have Jrue Holiday. We have Chris Middleton. Who do you favor offensively? Who do you favor defensively? Who do you think has the advantage?
I think Phoenix has the clear advantage here. I think with Milwaukee, DiVincenzo not being there has affected them a lot, especially on the defensive end. I mean, he's become a good spot-up shooter, but he added a lot for them on defense, and him and Holiday were becoming a really solid tandem. I think if you play Middleton at the two, you know, he's going to be able to score, and he's got some length, but it's hit and miss there because there are still some limitations with him having to guard quicker guys. And then with Booker and Paul, you just look at what they bring and how both of them can initiate the offense. Paul has always been a really underrated shooter, and you saw that he was torching the Clippers in that last game where, I mean, he went off for 42 points and was hitting from the outside. He's just never been a guy that's aggressively looked for his shot, but when he does, he's one of the better shooters in the league. Booker's dynamic at getting to the basket. Paul's arguably one of the top 3 to 5 defensive point guards to ever play the game. And I think that on Booker's end, he was bad defensively when he first came into the league, but this year he's actually become, you know, adequate. So for from that standpoint, I think Phoenix gets the nod decisively.
Okay, how do you feel about the matchup between DeAndre Ayton and Brook Lopez?
So this is probably the most interesting matchup that I think from an individual standpoint in the series. Lopez has never been a huge rebounder. And, you know, we know that he had his year where he shot well from the outside, but Lopez is really active and he's good offensively. He's a decent shot blocker. And just from guarding the post, he's been really good about that. And he does pretty well guarding guys when they're trying to face him up. So I think with Ayton has improved, especially as a back to the basket scorer, but there are moments where you see him get rushed. And when he gets rushed, gets a little bit hesitant with what he's going to do, how decisive he's going to be. There's been some bad passing there and gets in foul trouble also. And I think that that's one of those areas where I think Milwaukee can exploit that. So much of what Phoenix does offensively is predicated on DeAndre Ayton being a threat on the pick and roll. And if Milwaukee can find a way to limit his effectiveness, then I think that that's going to do a lot to make Phoenix more one-dimensional offensively. So that matchup, I think I would still say it's a bit of a wash, but that's the matchup to watch, in my opinion, just to see how that goes. Because if Lopez can be an irritant, that can swing things in Milwaukee's favor.
And I agree with you with the matchup as far as the backcourt goes with Paul and Booker and Holiday and Middleton. Clearly the advantage goes to the Suns. The reason I asked specifically though about Lopez against Ayton is because Lopez, for the two games that Giannis has been out, he's looked like the New Jersey Nets Lopez, and he hasn't looked like that guy in a very long time. I'm curious to see how he's going to play in the NBA Finals, because chances are more than likely Giannis is not going to play game one, and game one kind of sets the tone for the finals. And I'm very interested in seeing which Brook Lopez that we're going to get.
Yeah, Lopez, just on activity alone, can shift things in their direction. I mean, I'm looking at how he was able to affect Capella and Collins in the last series. And then against Brooklyn, with Brooklyn going undersized with Blake Griffin playing a five, and even when they would come bring in Claxton, who's not as big as Lopez, but he's bigger than or taller than Blake. And either way it went, Lopez's energy was just consistent all the way through. Now, sometimes with him being as energetic and active as he is on the defensive end and crashing the board, and that's the other thing too, right? Like I just said, he's not that good of a rebounder, but he does crash the glass. Like he's very unique. Like if you told me that Brook Lopez averaged under 8 rebounds a game, I would say, are you crazy? You know, because you look at him, you see that he is just in constant motion. But a lot of it's boxing out. A lot of it's creating opportunities for other guys to get long rebounds. The thing about him is that he can't get into foul trouble. Just being as active as he is, you know, he gets a lot of moving screen violations as well. So, like, they're going to have to temper that. But if he can play within himself and stay active and hold the point of attack, Ayton could be in for some issues here. And I think for Ayton, it's going to be important for him to just kind of stay within himself. I think that he's taking these matchups that against other bigs. He's played against some good bigs in the playoffs so far. I think he's taking these matchups against some of these bigs personal, and you want him to do that. I mean, this is a former number one pick in the draft and a guy that Phoenix feels is a cornerstone of their franchise, and he's a young guy who's emerging. But at other times, less is more. So I think in this situation, being a dependable screener, when they do screening roles, being a dependable guy on the glass, and being able to also face up and hit guys going to the basket when he's passing the ball, that's going to be good enough there, and he can get his offense off of that. But, you know, Lopez is going to be in his ass the whole series.
Who do you believe is more of an irritant, Jay Crowder or PJ Tucker?
Man, that's a good question. I think probably Crowder, because with Tucker, you get the sense that he's just more of a physical, tough guy, you know, physical defensively, because there's nobody who has a game that's more finesse on offense than PJ Tucker. You just get the sense with him that he really is just out there to play hard-nosed defense and to do the tough guy stuff. Crowder really is a troll. I mean, like, there's no way around that. Crowder gets off on pissing other people off. And I don't think Tucker really cares about getting under your skin. I think Tucker just wants to make sure that you know that he's out there, put an elbow on your back when he's guarding you, and, you know, everything else. So I would not be surprised if those two have a few moments in this series. I think it's actually inevitable. But in that battle, I'm going to put my money on PJ Tucker, just as far as pound for pound, who's the toughest of the two.
Well, one thing is for sure, and I can say this with 100% confidence, nobody will have a better sneaker game than PJ Tucker at this finals.
Oh, that goes without saying. I mean, this guy is legendary for having the shoe connect and coming in with some stuff that you ain't finding in the stores.
You ain't finding online. Forget the stores. Like, he's got shoes that's the only model of it.
He is the sneaker king of the NBA.
Without question. Now, let me ask you about this matchup. And both of these have played a very big part in their runs to the finals. The bench for the Suns and the bench for the Bucks. Which bench do you favor? Because Bobby Portis, Jeff Teague has had a sighting. We've seen very good play from the Milwaukee bench. We've seen very good play from the Phoenix bench. Which bench do you favor?
I favor the Phoenix bench. When you have Cam Johnson, who's one of the better shooters in the league, Cam Payne, who's done really well. We talked about how this is the best he's ever looked. I think those two alone give them a bit of an edge. Now, Bobby Portis has done a lot of good stuff for Milwaukee coming in and giving them minutes, you know, in the front court, especially with Giannis having his issues. But I just feel like when they come with their guys off the bench, they don't really have somebody who's going to change the pace, you know, change the tempo. When Cam Payne comes in for Phoenix, he does not play at the same pace that Chris Paul does. And sometimes you wish that he did because you want to be a little bit more under control, but he gives you a different look. And it feels like with Milwaukee, they're just giving you one consistent look, and they don't have anybody that's going to be able to just instantly shift the complexion or make you change the way that you're going to guard them. So I'm going to still ride with Phoenix as far as the bench is concerned.
Okay, and finally, have to ask you, 7-game series. We don't know if it's going to go 7 games or not. Who do you like winning the series and why?
I'm going to go with Phoenix in 6. Something tells me it can go 5, but I will give Milwaukee 6 games. Or give them the benefit of saying they'll be able to take a 6 games. For me, this is going to come down to Phoenix just being a better team when it comes to executing in the half court. And also a team that has more ways that they can beat you offensively. When I look at Milwaukee, I see a team that everything has to go well for them to be able to win games on a consistent basis. They were able to win some close games throughout the playoffs, but they do a lot of things because of the fact that they turn the ball over. They play at such a deliberate pace. Their shot selection is all over the place. It allows for them to limit their own ability and for teams to have runs on them. And if Phoenix gets a run on you, Phoenix is able to get up on you double digits with a guy like Chris Paul as the floor general, they're not going to relinquish that. You know, this isn't Atlanta where they're playing downhill all the time. So a 20-point lead to them is like a 2-point lead, and they're not worrying about the clock. They're not worrying about spacing. They're just continuing to attack. That's not what Phoenix is. Phoenix, with Chris Paul there, and then also with Devin Booker, when he becomes a primary ball handler, there's a rhyme and a reason to everything that they do. So I think it's going to be an intriguing series. Milwaukee have their moments, but I would expect Phoenix to win in 6.
Is there anything that Milwaukee can do to pull off the upset? Because not just yourself, many people are predicting that the Suns are going to win in 6. Some say 5. I've even seen some people say that Phoenix is going to easily win all 4 games.
If I were Milwaukee, I mean, I don't think that they'll do this, but if I were Milwaukee, I would actually attack Chris Paul and I would attack Devin Booker. Every chance I got, I would have Middleton, Drew Holiday in pick and roll situations, and I would just dare them to have them fight through screens and just keep attacking them. But nothing in the way that Milwaukee plays tells you they're going to attack. That's just not the way they get down. So that would be the way for me where I feel like they can kind of switch what they do. Don't settle for the outside shots almost every time down the floor. And then you do the, you know, you dump into to Lopez just to kind of so-called keep the defense honest. If I were them, I would attack those guards. If Holiday is going to continue to bring the ball to the free throw line and then pull back and then wait for everybody else to get in position, then they're going to not start initiating the offense so they get to 10 seconds left on the clock. You're playing into what Phoenix wants you to do on defense. And that's where I think that Milwaukee's going to have to, if they want to win, that's going to be where their best chance is. Don't be predictable with the way that you attack offensively. And, you know, we're in the finals now. Predictability has helped them weather certain storms, whether Giannis has been in the lineup or not. I just don't see Bud changing that.
I think the Suns are going to win this series in five. I'm happy that Milwaukee got there. Regardless of if they win or they lose, Giannis is going to be a legend in this city. And you think of all the players that have come through Milwaukee from then to now. I mean, they've had Ray Allen and Sam Cassell and Glenn Robinson and Vin Baker and so forth and so on. This group made it to the NBA Finals. So I think this will, win or lose, I think this group is going to be remembered in Milwaukee history for a long, long time. For the Suns, it's been a long time for them too. If you think the last time they made it was 1993, Charles Barkley, who's, you know, been at TNT for damn near 20 years, and the Suns hadn't, and you think about those Steve Nash teams, the D'Antoni teams, and all the fun that they had and all the three-point shots that they made, those teams never got to an NBA final. So it's good for the Phoenix Suns. I saw a very interesting stat. Nobody on both teams has an NBA championship, so whoever wins, this will be the first time for either team, for everybody on the roster. So I think that's a really cool thing. Also, shout out to Torrey Craig. No matter what happens, he gets a championship.
I think when I saw that yesterday, because the Eric Bledsoe jokes were out there, but that thing with Torrey Craig, I'm like, yeah, that's this dude is sitting there playing with house money.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were surprised it didn't work out with Milwaukee, considering the good run that he had in Denver. But clearly it's worked out. He's on the Suns. And as we praised Monty Williams earlier, he's rehabbed Cam Payne. And Cam Payne looks like he's going to make some money now. And he looks like a legitimate point guard in the NBA. And Torrey Craig.
Yep. Nah, you love to see stuff like that. And I do think that there are stories here that can be told depending on who wins. And look, as a Laker fan, of course, I'm disappointed that they flamed out in the first round. But as a basketball fan, I love seeing the new blood in the finals. Like, this to me is what creates a healthy league. It creates the balance. And all those small and mid-market teams that feel like they're not necessarily free agent destinations, or, you know, they've had some bad drafts, bad stretches of drafts. Like, it wasn't that long ago that we were criticizing Phoenix for just smoking first round picks on young front court players that couldn't play. And now you look, in 5 years, they're in the finals. So I think this type of stuff says that the league has more pathways to a championship than just get free agents, try to load your team up with as many stars as possible. Like, if you develop, if you stay the course, if you have the resources to then strike to get an established guy like Jrue Holiday, if you're Milwaukee, or if you're to get Chris Paul, if you're Phoenix, you know, those trades only happen because they were able to have enough young assets to put them that were attractive to get those pieces. So I think with that said, it just shows that there's a lot of different ways for you to get back to the top in the NBA. And this series is going to be, you know, an advertisement for that. Can't get started soon enough. This final also represents the end of the COVID effect on the NBA schedule, because after this, we get the draft, we get summer league, and then starting for the 2021-2022 season, we are back on the traditional calendar.
Yes, and I am glad to get back on regular schedule programming, because COVID has been a confusing time, and it was hard to keep up with the days and the months and who's playing what day, and five games in 2 days. It was very confusing.